This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. A presidential panel on mental health called for fundamental changes in the nation's mental health system in a report released yesterday. The new Freedom Commission on Mental Health, which President Bush created in April 2002, found that a major transformation was needed in the way care is provided to the mentally ill. The commission recommends that the system needs to be less crisis-oriented, that it's too focused on providing medication and managing symptoms, and needs to concentrate on prevention and more comprehensive care. The last major report on the mental health system came out in 1999. It was issued by then Surgeon General David Satcher. It found that society's sense of shame towards mental illness and limited reimbursement made effective treatment difficult. This week's report found that there are still major obstacles in getting effective mental health care. It concluded that the system is broken. This hour, we'll take a look at what the new report recommends and how it might come about. What have your encounters been with the mental health system? What would you do to change it? Join the conversation. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now here in Studio 3A is NPR health policy correspondent Joanne Silberner. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for inviting me.
So what is the problem with the system? Why is it broken, according to this report?
The biggest problem is it's fragmented. Nobody knows where to go, and once they, if they do get to a place that can provide them with services, they get services for what they need at that moment. They don't necessarily get follow-up services. It's hard to figure out where to go for preventive services. You know, if you talk to people who've been in crisis, you know, do you go to the hospital emergency room? You know, if you don't have insurance, they might send you away unless they think you're suicidal, in which case you might be involuntarily committed. I mean, it's a real mess because you can go, and in fact, in a lot of places you can get crisis care, but then you can't get the aftercare you need to prevent another crisis.
So what are the recommendations for how to fix it?
Well, they said goals, and the goals are, I think, agreed on by everybody in the mental health community. It needs to be a more integrated system. There needs to be more focus on prevention. It needs to be clear where you can go, and you need to get levels of aftercare. Things like housing become an issue. If you have a serious mental illness, you may have lost your job, you may have lost your house. It's fine if they get you through your crisis, but then where do you live? How do you get a new job? All that has to be integrated into, it has to be patient-oriented. That's what they're looking for. Something that doesn't say, okay, you're having a crisis, we're going to stop those voices you hear in your head, you're having depression, we're going to stop you from committing suicide, and then throw you out on the street. This is looking for something that will do more than that, that will look at you and say, you need this level of care. After you get out of the hospital, we're going to be here for you. This, we're not going to hand you a bag of pills and say, you know, go ahead. We're going to tell you where you can go. We're going to tell you about clinics. We're going to tell you about things you can do.
And what is the scale of the problem as described in this report?
Well, there are no numbers on how many people encounter this problem, but there are numbers on how many people have a problem. About 5 to 7% of adults in this country every year have a fairly serious mental illness. And that's something that really needs to be looked at. How many of them are treated correctly? That's a hard one. Even if you look at the number of people with insurance, that's not going to give you the answer because a lot of health insurance isn't adequate. If you look at the number of people on Medicaid, which does provide some mental health services, or Medicare, which has begun to do that recently, again, you're not going to get a sense of it because if you're in a rural area, you might have a problem. There are places where there are good services. There are places where there are not enough services.
5 to 7% of adults. What about children?
Children, I believe it's 6 to 9%. It's a much higher number. You know, the one thing about mental illness that you would think would make it less stigmatized is that virtually everybody knows somebody. You know, it might be Uncle Joe who was, you know, sort of sent away, or it might be Aunt Sue who you haven't heard from. But everybody's got this in their family at one level or another.
As you say, the report has been broadly welcomed, but it strikes me that a lot of these ideas are not exactly new, that indeed some of them were incorporated in this report from 1999 by Surgeon General Satcher, and it seems like nothing was done, at least according to this report.
Well, what was done was it medicalized mental illness. I think there's a tendency in this country to think of mental illness as a weakness. Somebody's giving in to a tragic life event. Somebody is not able to control themselves. There was that sense. And I think when the Surgeon General came out with this report that really documented physical changes, you know, really serious issues, he medicalized it. That was the first step that needed to be taken towards making people understand what it is and destigmatizing it. What this report is doing is it's setting out goals. It's saying we need to do these things. It's not saying exactly how, and that's the challenge.
The report concentrates more on the delivery of this medical approach. I mean, does it change its ideas in terms of how to approach Surgeon General Satcher?
Well, Surgeon General Satcher's report said this is a medical illness. It needs to be paid for as such. It needs to be treated as such. This report is saying we need to start with the patient. It needs to be started around the patient's needs and not, don't treat symptoms, treat the patient. You need to do an A to Z treatment.
And as you say, it does not say how this is going to happen.
Not really. There are some nice general goals that lay out a framework, but the specifics aren't there.
And does it say whether it's going to cost a lot of money?
Well, the commissioners worked under the premise that they will not get more, that more money will not be coming into the system. But they make the very good point that prevention is less costly than treatment, and that you should be able to do prevention or, you know, mitigation with the same amount of money that you're using for treatment and have more of an effect.
Joanne Silberner is going to be with us throughout this discussion, so stay right here. But joining us now is someone who's going to be was intimately involved in this process. Charles Curie is a member of the President's Commission on Mental Health, also the administrator of the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, which is part of the Department of Health and Human Services, HHS. He and his administration have been charged with turning the commission report into an action plan, and he joins us now from his office in Rockville, Maryland. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you, Neil. It's good to be with you.
How are you going to translate this set of goals into concrete policies?
Well, as you indicated, we have been charged with the task by Secretary Thompson and the White House to develop an action plan. And the good news is, along with myself being a member, ex officio member of the commission, there were six other ex officio members representing government agencies on the commission, and very much were involved in this assessment, which led to the goals and recommendations. And what we are in the process of doing is pulling together a cross-agency mental health agenda at the federal level, looking at these goals and recommendations, examining how we can assure that we're sending consistent messages to our counterparts at the state level. And again, states is where the action is, really, when it comes to mental health service delivery. They've had the responsibility at the state level. Mike Hogan was commissioner of mental health, is commissioner of mental health in Ohio, chaired the commission. I formerly am the commissioner of mental health from the state of Pennsylvania. And so several of us who've been involved with this understand that the states need to be intimately involved. And what we need to be looking at doing for the first time, to amplify what Joanne was saying, is we need to take a look at our policies, our programs, and our financing around not only assuring access to quality assessment and treatment and prevention services, but I think most importantly, focusing on both resilience but also recovery. The commission focused on people with serious mental illness, children with serious emotional disturbances, and we're recognizing and realizing that to stop the revolving door, people going in and out of treatment and not getting better, you not only need to assure that there's the appropriate medical interventions, and we need to make sure that those are always being refined and that we're getting the best state of the science knowledge to practice. But in looking at recovery, we're looking at the end game, people gaining a life in the community. The premise, a major premise of the New Freedom Mental Health Commission was being tied to the President's New Freedom Initiative, which is assuring that people with disabilities have the opportunity to participate fully in society and in the community. And that was a major premise of this report. How do we go about doing that? And recovery, the process of recovery being identified, and the collaboration that has to take place between multiple systems to assure that's done, is going to be a critical part of the action plan.
Joanne?
Well, will there be some stepping on toes here? I mean, if you're moving, you know, when closing the state hospitals, there was an issue. The workers in the state hospitals sometimes objected to that because they were going to be losing jobs. If you're changing the focus, won't there be some vested interests that will be working against that?
Well, Joanne, and you're right. I think always when you're looking at change, there's always going to be those who will question the change or initially feel perhaps threatened by the change. I think the good news from that perspective here is that, as you indicated earlier, there has been initially a wide-ranging support for the fact that we need to transform the system. And that's coming not only from consumers and family members clearly, that's where our focus needs to be. Those are the individuals we need to serve. But providers, and providers were also well represented on the commission, providers, county government, state government, trade associations, all have rallied around these goals, recognizing that if we do embrace recovery, we do embrace both the medical model in terms of alleviating symptoms, as you indicated, as well as then working toward helping people build a life, which includes a job, a home, connectedness, significant relationships in the community, that people are going to attain a sustained recovery. And we're finding people across the whole spectrum of the mental health care field, we're finding common ground around those themes, and I think that's where the action plan needs to be based, plus involving all those individuals in the development of the action plan.
Our phone number, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, our email address, TOTN@npr.org, and let's begin with Lily, who joins us on the line from Salt Lake City.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I'm an intensive in-home therapist, and I work with some of the most severe families, and the referrals come from children who are acting out and usually get into the psychiatric hospitals. And I see exactly, on a really hands-on basis, what you're talking about. And I'm so glad you're having this conversation. Everything, I would agree with it. There's a lot of taboos about getting help, and yet almost every family from the outside looks really normal, and on the inside there's all these secrets. And I agree with what was said about everyone knows someone in their immediate family or very close to that who's going through some form of mental health crisis. And the positives I see are some of the insurance companies are really opening up to innovative treatments like mine, in which the worker goes into the home. And the family is treated in a really dignified way, and the resources and motivation of the family to change are really core, instead of having them come into a sterile office and talk about changes, then go home and do what they're doing and have been doing for years. And I really see a lot of multi-generational problems that even families that are really educated don't know how to change because it's all they know. But when you go into the home and it's really hands-on, people really want their lives to be different, but sometimes the way the managed care and the government system set it up is you have to go into crises to get help. And the clients know that, and they know that if they work too hard, they won't get services, and if they try too hard, and it's such a backwards approach. So I see both. I see insurance companies that'll tell me, well, For that kid to get your service, he needs to have a blowout and try to commit suicide or homicide or, you know, do a substance abuse overdose for you to be able to go in. And even then, we don't have that benefit, so they'd have to go to the state hospital or residential inpatient at 10 to 13 grand a month, when my service is like, you know, a fifth of that, but it's not within their benefit. So it's like everyone is thinking inside this old traditional box. And it's just like, throw the box out. these old systems that don't fit. We have so much research. Psychology has come such a long way. And there's so many neat therapies that are solution-focused and really create change and really create community resources.
Lily, thanks very much for your comment. We're obviously running out of time in this segment. We're speaking about the new presidential report, a new presidential commission report on the nation's healthcare system. And we're taking your calls, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Right back after a break, it's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing a new report from a presidential commission on mental health that recommends transformation of the nation's mental health care system. And we're going to get to that in just a moment, but first an update. There was a shooting at New York City's City Hall. Earlier this afternoon, a gunman was reported to have opened fire and shot dozens of times from the balcony in the City Hall Council Chamber. According to wire service accounts, two people were injured and taken away from the scene. Mayor Bloomberg, who was in City Hall at the time but is not injured, has told reporters the shooting is not terrorism and that the suspect is still at large. NPR News will continue to follow this story. Details later today on All Things Considered, so stay tuned for that. Again, we're discussing the nation's mental health care system. Our guests are NPR health policy correspondent Joanne Silberner and Charles Curie, a member of the President's Commission on Mental Health and Administrator of Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. What would you do if you could change the system? If you have a mentally ill friend or family member, call. Tell us what works, what doesn't. Join the discussion and tell us what we can do to erase a major problem that everybody identifies with mental health, and that is the stigma. Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and the email address is totn@npr.org. And let's go back and take another caller. Regina, and I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, joins us from Grand Rapids in Michigan.
Hi. I'm glad about the commission's report, and one of your guests had said, though, that in the report that there wasn't any plan for increased funding. And I worked in the mental health system for 11 years, and I can say that without increased funding, it's going to be really difficult to make drastic changes in the system.
Well, Mr. Curie, what do you think?
Well, the focus of the commission was to take a look at how to best utilize resources and place incentives in the system to be doing the right thing. And I think first premise is, regardless of how much money there is in the system, and no one is saying that the system is overfunded by no uncertain terms, but the issue is, if we have our structures in place and our financial incentives set up to assure that the evidence-based practices are in place, what Lily was talking about earlier, that we're able to offer and pay for within our current resources, home-based services, and that is discussed in this report, how you can have wraparound home-based services around children and get better results and more cost-effective results at $4,300 per month instead of over $7,000 per month, for example, for the most seriously ill children, that if we're able to reconfigure and transform the system around putting the dollars and resources in the right places, then focus also, as we move ahead in terms of the amount of resources that are needed, we're going to be in a much stronger position to be able to make good decisions about where money should go.
As we mentioned earlier, though, Charles Curie, you were formerly a state official who was involved in this in the state of Pennsylvania, and you know that every time a federal official says, you know, the real action is in the states and they have to transform their services, every state official sees two words blinking in big neon across their forehead, that is unfunded mandate.
Understood. I think what we're going to be looking for are funded options. In other words, working in partnership with the states as part of this action plan. Again, both Mike Hogan, who was chairman of the commission, Steve Mayberg, also commissioner from California, and myself very much have been at the state level, understand that. And that's another reason why, as part of our action plan right now, we are looking to make available to states state incentive grants as part of the action plan that would be awarded to governor's offices, which would begin the process of facilitating all the entities that need to come together at the state level, the mental health authority, the Medicaid authority, labor, housing, education, criminal justice, public health, all those entities which right now, being in separate silos, can perpetuate the fragmentation, come together with an integrated mental health agenda plan from the state. And again, Medicaid being a very important part of that around the financing to put the incentives in the right place. We think for the first time there can be a true, real, comprehensive plan at the state, and we're looking for ways to both fund that and also give flexibility to states to be able to design a system which is appropriate to them that could get translated into being into seeing an individualized plan of care developed. So the problem that Joanne described earlier, people not knowing where to go for help, that they will actually have a plan and have the resources to leverage the help.
Regina, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
It's easy to, well, it's not easy, but it's relatively straightforward to look at the system we have now and say, what's wrong with it? What's the vision of this plan? What would that mental health care system look like in 10 years, say, if the leadership and the energy and the dynamism and perhaps, yes, a few billion dollars, too, were thrown into this and the transformation is complete?
I think the vision would include a day where if an individual goes to their primary care physician, and again, more people see their primary care physician or go to a primary care setting than they go to a specialized mental health center. And the tools are available to not only do an overall physical review, but be able to do some screenings. And we have tools available today that can screen early on depression, that can screen early on serious emotional disturbance in a child, that we are able to pinpoint windows of opportunity of where mental illness may be emerging in one's teen years and be able to take interventions earlier on to have a greater impact, that there's a true integration with primary care and mental health, and that once a potential problem is identified, that there's a clear pathway to the treatment intervention that's needed, and that's all connected. I think using technology to assure that connectedness takes place. We haven't fully utilized technology, and Goal 6 in the Commission report talks about the importance of that. And so I think individualized electronic health record, which also ties into mental health, to follow an individual, and also assuring, I mentioned primary care, but assuring that any door is the right door to receive mental health treatment. That would include schools. There are models of school-based programs and interventions, and that's discussed as well in the report, that we have partnerships with education, and education was at the table during the commission and will continue to be at the table with the action plan and be one of the entities at the state level that we'd want to continue to involve. But that there will be an ongoing awareness that mental health is essential to health, that it's part of overall health screening, and that school systems, primary care systems, and where people present themselves will have a pathway to receive the mental health they need, and that they don't have to worry about navigating and negotiating a system, but that the system is morphed around their needs and basically is able to come to them, and that they're able to leverage resources to their own benefit.
Charles Currie, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Neil.
Charles Currie is a member of the President's Commission on Mental Health. He's also the administrator of the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, part of the Department of Health and Human Services. He was with us from his office in Rockville, Maryland. Joining us now from his home in Alexandria, Virginia, is Mike Feyenza. Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
And he's president and CEO of the National Mental Health Association, which helps provide consumer information on this. And as you look at this report, is the system as broken as this report makes it seem?
Yes, I think that one of the things that consumer interests across the country are happy about is that the report makes it clear that our system of care for kids and adults with mental illness is really is in shambles, and the president's to be commended, and Mike Hogan and the commission are to be commended for really telling the truth about how bad the situation is for people with mental disorders in this country. One of the things that I hear consumers value the most about the commission report is it really emphasizes what Charlie Currie noted is this principle of recovery, that value and respect for people who participate in treatment, that principle is extremely important, that the consumer, the family, that the young person's need really drives treatment. But an overlying concern here has to do with the future of the report, and we don't want to see this report be another document that sits on the shelf. And I think your caller who asked about funding really echoes something that most of us in the consumer and family movement really agree on, and that's that we have to get serious about funding and public policy if we're going to improve services.
Well, let me ask a follow-up on that with Joanne Tilburner, and that is the question that Mr. Fahans just raised, and the question being there are a lot of very good reports with a lot of good recommendations that are gathering dust with little changing. What is going to happen, what is going to have to happen to get this off the dime?
Boy, that's a good question. You know, there have been a number of events. There was a Surgeon General's report, which I think establish this as a mental illnesses as a medical issue that needs to be treated in a cogent and comprehensive way. There was a Supreme Court decision that said that people with severe mental illnesses must be treated in the least restrictive environment possible. There's now this report. Is that enough? Are these three events going to be enough to push it? I don't know. When I look at it, I think that, there's a mental health insurance parity bill that says that's been really fighting its way through Congress, and it's not clear where it's going, that says that insurance has to treat mental illness the way the Surgeon General said it was, as a medical illness. There's resistance to putting more restrictions or more requirements on insurance companies because that'll raise the price of insurance. You know, I think I'd feel better about answering your question in a little bit of time when I see where that goes and when I see how seriously this is picked up. It's a hard thing to predict.
Well, I think that Charlie Curry's action plan and the integration of planning between different health and human service agencies is a good one. But consumers feel that there are some logical and glaring places to start right now. This report couldn't come at a better time because public mental health systems are in worse trouble than they have been in many, many years. Actually, mental health services in the majority of states in this country are being cut and rolled back because of the budget crisis in states. And the reality is that kids and adults with serious mental illnesses right now have less services and options open to them than they did 18 months ago. And it's inevitable that the system will deteriorate more over the next 18 months. So there are things that need to be addressed by the federal government and state legislatures right away if we're going to block the kinds of deterioration that is happening now. It's also the case that there's public policy opportunities that are really important to people with mental disorders that aren't working out so well now.
Mm-hmm.
Both,
I don't mean to be a cynic about this, but asking the federal government and state legislators to act on anything right away don't hold your breath.
Well, it's one of the things that we have not been serious about mental health in the United States or substance abuse, and the public health costs for people being in jail, kids in justice systems, people ending up homeless is huge. And I don't know that we're in touch with how shameful it is in this country to have millions of people that are vulnerable and who suffer and have really severe medical needs that are neglected. There's no easy way or simple way to address this problem, but until our elected officials and opinion leaders really understand how bad it is for millions of people in this country, we will get nothing done. If the political will is there, things will change, but the American people have to support this. And again, there's things going on in Congress and states that really need to be addressed immediately. The Medicare bill that bills in both houses that are ready to be addressed in a conference committee, neither one of those allowed for equity for mental health benefits in Medicare. There was no provisions there, so people with mental health problems covered by Medicare have to really pay unreasonable copays as opposed to other illnesses. The state of Texas right now is close to shutting down mental health services provided for children in the state Children's Health Insurance Program.
So, we're talking with Mike Faenza of the National Mental Health Association about the Presidential Commission report on the nation's mental health care system. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's go next to Stan, who joins us on the line from Douglas, Wyoming.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be with you this afternoon. I want to just offer one individual story of this whole big picture. I currently pay over $14,000 a year because I'm self-employed to have health insurance. My health insurance company has the legal right to raise that as much as 63% per annum if they don't like something about my medical report, and that's really about the only justification they have to have is they don't like something. One of the things they have made extraordinarily clear is that they don't like seeing things like antidepressants on my prescription lineup. And so they make it very clear that they're going to penalize someone for attempting to take care of their depression needs, whereas, in fact, the person who doesn't take care of their needs is the person who's most likely to cost them a lot of money. The dream circumstance that Mr. Curie described is never going to come about so long as for-profit insurance companies are acting as an impediment to individuals getting the health care they need.
Mike Faenza?
Yeah, I agree. If the practices of health insurance companies and HMOs in this country do not change and are not equitable and more rational about mental health care, we're not going to gain ground in terms of the health status and quality of life of people with mental illnesses. And we really do need federal leadership to change that situation.
Joanne?
I don't want to be here defending any industry, but when we're talking about the insurance company, I think we also have to talk about people buying insurance. And what happens is insurance companies sell the policies that companies ask for. I'm not talking about individual policies, but group policies. And what the insurance companies are saying is that no one will pay the extra rate, and that the change needs to happen not just at the level of the insurance companies, but at the people buying insurance. They have to be willing. And in fact, studies have shown it wouldn't be that much if it were spread across the board.
Well, that's true. Studies have shown that, but we still have had the insurance industry and groups like the National Association of Manufacturers, National Federation of Independent Businesses, that just use their political muscle to prevent really advancing just what is fairness in health insurance. And the American public needs to understand that. And
Stan, I heard you trying to get back in. We just have a few seconds.
Well, just quickly in response to Joanne, they didn't offer that to me.
Individuals are excluded. I didn't mean that.
That I was able to buy was extraordinarily limited. And if, in fact, insurance companies would see, and they specifically said that they saw antidepressants on my schedule, they wouldn't even sell me a policy. So it isn't a matter of whether I will or will not pay for it. It's a matter of whether for-profit insurance is prepared to offer a product which the American people can use. And after years of experience with it, my answer to that is they cannot.
Stan, thanks very much for the call. And thanks, too, to Mr. Faenza. We appreciate your participation.
Thank you very much.
We'll continue our conversation after a short break. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing the transformation of the mental health system that the recommendation of a report issued this week by a President's Commission on Mental Health. With us here in Studio 3A is NPR health policy correspondent Joanne Silberner. What changes in the nation's mental health system would you recommend? If you have a friend or a family member who's gone through the system, what was effective, what wasn't? Our phone number, 800-989-8255, and the email address is totn@npr.org. Deanna Yates joins us now. She's a psychologist and a member of the American Psychological Association. She also participated in the President's Commission. She joins us now from the Marriott Hotel in Cancun, Mexico. I assume you're there on vacation. I appreciate you taking your time.
You're welcome. Happy to be here.
Okay. You helped write this report. What were the biggest frustrations for practitioners, and how does the report address those concerns?
Well, I think the biggest frustration for practitioners, well, there's many, but certainly the fact that people do not get screened and identified early when treatment could be most valuable, and later treatments, more expensive treatments, could be avoided, I think is one of the very frustrating things. Of course, the other frustrating thing is that mental health is not treated with the same respect as physical health, as is shown from the lack of parity. People have to pay larger co-pays for mental health treatment, and it is often very hard for people to get treatment because of the cost. I know there are many families who give up custody of their children to the state in order to get treatment for their children, and in a country like America, it doesn't seem like that should have to happen. So those are some of the frustrations, I think, that practitioners feel along the way.
Joanne, that's an interesting comment, that the stigma that's talked about is a lot more than just the fisheye that you might get in the office after you come back, but it's structured into the system.
Absolutely, and that's where the insurance problem comes in. It's been accepted that it's covered in a separate way, and that's where the Surgeon General's report, I think a lot of people are hoping, will move things over. Now that you can look at it as a medical issue, maybe there'll be pressure on insurance companies in some way or another to include this in a more equal way.
Deanna Yates, are we talking about an ideal that's recommended in the goals expressed in this commission's report, or is this a practical document that can actually be acted upon?
Oh, I think it's very practical. I think we would have failed terribly if we had not written something that we felt were practical, and from a provider's perspective, I think it's very practical. I think that the recommendations that we have made are, in many areas, are specific enough that they can be carried out. I know in terms of training, evidence-based treatments, we talk a lot about that, and as a provider, the importance of getting these kinds of treatments to providers early through training programs, both at university levels and within the provider community, I think are very important and can be done, should be able to be done rather easily.
Let's get another caller in. Betty joins us now from Orange County in California.
Oh, hi. I wanted to comment on the kind of problems that my daughter and I have had getting care. She was diagnosed with bipolar disorder when she was 15, and was later diagnosed with the same thing. And one of the big problems with children is that there just aren't any facilities to treat children. In Orange County, there's one hospital that they can go to if they have a suicide attempt, and that was a nightmare. And she had to change high schools to get into a class for children with mental disorders, and it was a very helpful class, but she had to change high schools. And our healthcare professionals are having to get us recertified every five visits in order to continue care, even though we're doing this with bipolar disorder, which I understand doesn't go away. And currently, we're even paying for her psychiatrist out of our own pocket because just for continuity, because the doctor is not covered under our current healthcare plan.
Deanna Yates, does the report address these concerns?
I believe so. I specifically work with children and adolescents, so I know what this caller is talking about. And one of the things we've addressed is the issue of having children identified within school systems and linking them to providers, but also having school health programs, including mental health, be provided in the schools. Children shouldn't have to change schools. Many of these services should be able to be provided in the school systems, and there are many programs where that is happening. For example, the Dallas-Fort Worth system in Texas has a wonderful mental health program going on in the school system, meeting the needs of children. So, yes, it's a doable thing.
Betty, thanks very much for the call, and we wish both you and your daughter the best.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Let's go now to Karen, and Karen is with us from Modesto, California.
Yes. Hi, Neil.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. I want to speak this morning for, I suspect, thousands of people who are listening to this show and are very glad to hear it and to hear the general thrust of it, but nonetheless have a sinking feeling in their stomach when they listen to it. Quite frankly, while I'm thrilled to hear about things like integrating systems, I think the most important need hasn't been mentioned at all. And I think that is the need for a change of leadership in the mental health care system. I think we need to abolish careerism, and I think we need to get some innovative and courageous people in there. This show is talking about insurance. Well, by golly, let's talk about the severity in California, which I can speak to, of people with schizophrenia, one of the most common and severe forms of mental illness. We're talking about shifting from critical care to supportive care. There is no critical care here in Central California. There are people...
It sounds, Karen, I know you have more to say, Karen, but it sounds that in general you despair of the idea of change at all.
Well, I think what has happened is that because the system is so vast and so broken, I think that people who are in the driver's seat have become cynical. Counties put up facade programs which look good but serve very few numbers of people or serve no one.
Well, let's get a response from Deanna Yates.
Sure.
That's a tough issue. I can tell you at times I despair too. But I do believe that there are people out there that are caring providers that want to see these changes take place. But I will tell you that as long as legislators meet in committee hearings and laugh about mental health conditions because they don't really accept them, as long as that stigma is there, and it is there, it is still pervasive. Until that kind of attitude changes, it will be hard to make change. This is not going to be an easy process. We are basically saying we need to throw out the system and start over and plan a system that really works from top down across the lifespan for everyone in this country. And it is not going to be without a lot of work.
Karen, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Neil. Bye-bye.
So long. And Deanna Yates, we appreciate your time.
Well, thank you, Neil.
Deanna Yates, a psychologist, a member of the American Psychological Association, who was a participant in the President's Mental Health Commission. She was with us taking time for her vacation to address this issue from the Marriott Hotel in Cancun, Mexico. And we thank her. We also thank NPR's health policy correspondent, Joanne Silberner, who was with us here in Studio 3A. Always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Glad to be here.